Our script reading for this morning is Daniel 3. This is one of the Bible events that we have heard about many times. It is quite familiar, and we know exactly how it will play out. We have become nearly immune to the amazement and awe of what God did in this situation that could be described as absolutely terrifying. These three men were totally committed to serving God, the Almighty, and would not consider bowing to a gold image, no matter what the cost. Please follow along with me as I read Daniel 3 from the New American Standard Bible. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king sent word to assemble the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges, the magistrates, and all the rulers of the provinces were assembled for the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "To you the command is given, O peoples, nations, and men of every language, that at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. But whoever does not fall down in worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire." Therefore, at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. For this reason, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and brought charges against the Jews. They responded and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of that of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I made for you, or that I made, very well. But if you do not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. He commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire, still tied up. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste. He said to his high officials, "Was it not three men we cast bound into the midst of the fire?" They replied to the king, "Certainly, O king." He said, "Look, I see four men loosened and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods." Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the furnace of blazing fire. He responded and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. The satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their head singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command, and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." Then the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon.
King Nebuchadnezzar asked a very interesting question. You might have noticed that in verse 15, "What God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?" Well, he was about to find out. There is only one God, and he was about to deliver them. Now, as we noticed last week, Nebuchadnezzar was getting the idea that there's something very interesting about the God of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, previously known as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. But he really hadn't totally got it yet. He kind of added this God to his list. He's a good God. He can really do some cool things. But he's still not fully on board, if you will. And we see that here in the words that he said. We see that here in the fact that he had this idol built. This idol's very interesting. In chapter 2 of Daniel, we read about Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And this picture that we have on the screen, it's of course somebody's idea about how it might have looked. We don't know for sure. But he saw an image similar to what you're seeing there, and the head was of gold, but then as you move down, there were different materials that were used. And we'll just review. Here's the description of that statue that the king saw in his dream. "You, O king, were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue. That statue, which was large and of extraordinary splendor, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. The head of the statue was made of fine gold, its breast and arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." And then Daniel went on to explain that this indicated Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom were represented by the head of gold, but then the silver represented another nation that was going to come along and take over, followed by another and another and another. So that's the information that was delivered to the king after he had this dream that had him very shook up. So now, some years later, He makes this statue. And it's so interesting. It's all gold. Now, we can't know for sure what was going on in Nebuchadnezzar's mind. We don't know for sure if this statue looked as the picture shows it. Maybe it did. But it was all gold, 90 feet tall and all covered with gold. And I have to wonder if Nebuchadnezzar's mindset went something like this. Yeah, I had that dream, but you know, this kingdom is so amazing and so great. And I have so many good helpers, sub-rulers. I think this is just going to go on forever. And I think that dream was just a false alarm. So I'm going to make this statue out of gold from top to bottom. That is speculation on my part. But it seems like it could have been that kind of a thought process. You know, the king had given praise to Daniel's God near the end of chapter 2 there. He said, surely your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, since you have been able to reveal this mystery. But he just added him to the list. Here's another God. This one's really above average. This one plays at the varsity level. Some of these other ones are just, you know, kind of like JV gods. They're not nearly as good. This one's pretty good. But it was just one more on his list. He didn't really truly comprehend that Daniel's God is the God, the only God. Well, this false God was impressive. 90 feet tall is pretty amazing. This ceiling is 20 feet from the floor to the ceiling, 20 feet. Okay, so do the math. 4.5 times higher than this ceiling. That's pretty tall. All gold. Pretty impressive. Only 9 feet wide. That's kind of interesting. But it may have been on a pedestal like our picture shows. We don't know that for sure. Haven't uncovered any drawings or records that would indicate the details of it. But it was high visibility. And of course, the king was intent on making sure that everybody cooperated, that everybody bowed down to this. It was worldliness on display. The music that played before everybody's supposed to bow down, that's significant. You could call it the prelude, maybe, the prelude to worship. Here it is. Here's the reminder. Turn your focus over there. Fall down and worship. This is what everybody's doing. Imagine listening to the list that Jake read for us. That's quite an unusual orchestra, wouldn't you say? To have that combination of instruments playing. Had a bagpipe in there, among other things. But it was no doubt loud and demanding. It's time. Time to start. Time to worship. And of course, pressure packed situation. There's no other option. You must fall down and worship this God, or it's very simple. You'll be incinerated. End of story. And so people were complying. They were going along with it, except for three. You know, we're reminded that the world often pushes its anti-God agenda in ways that appeal to the senses. The sight of this idol was impressive. The sound of the music was involved. The threat of death by burning, that's pretty pretty repulsive. You definitely would want to avoid that. The message was loud and clear. Get on board. Do what everybody else is doing. Don't take a chance. Do what the king says. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. We can find some of these same kind of tactics down through history and even still around us today. Just recently in our Saturday morning church history class, we were reminded about some people that were eliminated, killed, because they weren't supporting the agenda of the church leaders. It's a shame to have to say that, but so-called church, maybe we should add that phrase in there, so-called church leaders. They had the title anyway. But there's three kinds of sin. You probably knew this. They're listed for us in 1 John 2:16. Any sin you want to think of, it fits in one of these categories. All that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And you can see all three of these rolled into one package with this idol scene. The lust of the flesh, pleasure, staying away from fire, that increases your pleasure. You know, you don't want to end up in there. The lust of the eyes, seeing that flashy, glitzy gold statue, that's very appealing. The pride of life was very tied in here. It was a prideful creation. Worshipping it was the popular thing to do. Everybody's getting on board. You know, everybody does worship. The question is, who? Who will you worship, or what will you worship? There's all kinds of worshipers. We've been hearing about all this snow in Buffalo. I don't know how many feet it's up to now, but last report I was hearing in places that it was 6 feet deep. And they even moved the location of a sporting event. And then I had a flashback. My wife and I lived in Wisconsin for 6 years. And there was a blizzard. Everything was shut down, but they had a football game in Green Bay, and 20,000 people got there. I was amazed. 20,000 got through all that blizzard and went to that game. Now, I might get some hate mail for this, but those people are worshipers. That's the most important thing in their life. That's what they're worshiping. And there's a lot of other things. I just kind of picked that one up because it's kind of in the foreground, in the news right now. But everybody worships. What will they worship? Well, these three men obviously worshiped the one true God. They feared the Lord. They refused to fear men. Jesus talked about this. He said, you know, it's much more important to fear God than to fear men. Don't fear those who kill the body but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. And they definitely feared the Lord. And there's another interesting element to that. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. If you remember back to chapter 1, when they went through the Babylon training academy, and they came out at the top of the class, It said there that they were 10 times wiser than any of the other wise men in the entire kingdom. So that included the ones that had been in their class, and it also included all the others as well. Well, this wisdom, this ability that these guys had came from the Lord, from the fear of the Lord. They were just not going to give in at all. Now, if you've got your Bibles open there, let's look at verses 16, 17, and 18. I'm not going to have this one on the screen, but this was their response, the words they said to the king. They answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to give you an answer concerning this. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. It's not happening, king. We are drawing the line. They hadn't worshipped this idol before, and now the king was giving them another chance, just in case they didn't understand or something, you know. He's giving them another opportunity to bow down. But they stood firm. They were decisive. They knew what God's word said. They knew the Ten Commandments. They knew some of the Psalms, I'm sure. Here's a verse that might have been encouragement to them in this time of extreme challenge. Psalm 91, 1 and 2. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Psalm 27, 1 to 3. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the defense of my life. Whom shall I dread? When evildoers came upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war arise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. They had courage. They were being told, bow down and worship this 90-foot golden image or get thrown into the furnace. That's quite the options. But they stood true. They weren't giving in. They had great faith. Hebrews tells us that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. They had faith. They had hope. We've talked about this before. Hope. Biblical hope is certainty. It's not hope-so hope. The way that word gets used today is not the biblical use of the word. They had certainty that God was in control, that he would see them through. Either way, they were going to be with the Lord at some point. If God had not chosen to spare them, they would have been dead in a moment, and they would have been with him. But they were determined they were not going to compromise. They were not going to yield. They were empowered by God's Spirit, God's Word. They couldn't do this in their own strength. God gave them the ability. You know, I was thinking about some other Bible characters that were in situations where they had to stand. They had to stand alone. It was not popular to do what they were doing. Noah's effort was viewed as absurd. You're building a boat? And he worked at it for a century until it was complete. He stood alone. Well, just the immediate family with him. Joseph, stood against sin. Potiphar's wife was trying to lure him into sin. He said, I can't do this thing and sin against God. Joshua, knowing the fickle hearts of the people, said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Samuel confronted a disobedient king and said, to obey is better than sacrifice. Isaiah confronted sin and said, woe to those that call good evil and evil good. Jeremiah explained that the heart's deceitful. You know, that's not very popular. It never was. It isn't now. It's much more convenient to blame all your sin on something else and somebody else and something that happened in the past and some disease that came upon you, and the list goes on. It's right here. It's where the problem is. The heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. Jeremiah spoke that. He was alone. His message is still not very popular. Job was tempted to curse God and die. A few things went wrong for Job. He said, the Lord gave and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He wouldn't cave in, even though everything around him was caving in. And then, of course, there's Daniel. He too would only pray to the true and living God under threat of being thrown to the lions, which we read about in chapter 6, which brings up the question, where is Daniel right about now? Lots of times he's mentioned right next to his three friends, and he's not here. He's not mentioned at all. You can read it as close as you want, and you won't find even a hint as to where he is. We're left to speculate. We can be sure of this. If Daniel had been there, he would not have bowed. Okay? We can all agree on that, right? Because we've got the big picture of all these different things that happened to Daniel, and we know that he was committed, faithful. He wasn't going to bow. So there's been different possibilities that have been proposed. He may have been away on official business for the king. And I mean, he was high up. He was right next to the king. And then his three friends were also fairly high up the ladder. They were overseeing different parts of the kingdom. But Daniel was gone. And we don't know for sure where he was, but God orchestrated things the way that they were. And those three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, took their stand. They said, doesn't matter, king, whatever you say, we are going to be true to the true and living God. You know, this furnace was a threat to get conformity. Maybe you've noticed that most of the time the world's idea of unity is conformity. If we can get everybody to be exactly the same, then we've done it. We've achieved unity. When I read my Bible, I discover that in the church we have unity with diversity. That's God's way. But this furnace was quite a threat. The king was hot. The furnace was even hotter. The furnace was heated up to seven times hotter at the king's order, which is interesting because the king wasn't thinking. If he wanted to make the torment worse, then he should have reduced the temperature, not increased the temperature. We know from the passage that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego survived being thrown in there, but the guys that threw them in died. So they died instantly, just getting that close. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were protected, obviously. Those valiant warriors that the king had specifically handpicked to do this difficult task perished from that extreme heat. And yet, the three that were in the fire didn't even have the smell of smoke on them later when they came out. Isaiah wrote these words: "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they will not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be scorched, nor will the flame burn you." It was a miracle. There's no other way to describe it. And then there is the fourth man in the fire with them. Deliverance personified. They were accompanied by the pre-incarnate Christ. Now you're thinking, that's a new term. Maybe it's a new term to some of you. We have numerous times throughout the Old Testament where the angel of the Lord shows up. And when the angel of the Lord shows up, that's major. That's big stuff. There are many times, there were times when it involved fire specifically, like the burning bush with Moses and Manoah is the father of Samson. And when the angel of the Lord came and told them that they were going to have a very specially unusual and gifted son, there was fire involved. The angel of the Lord then ascended in the smoke from the fire up to heaven. We just heard about this at Grace Bible Club, so some of you are all over this one. You just heard the story. But Ezekiel had fire in some of his visions and things. But the angel of the Lord walked with them through that extremely difficult situation. And he continues to do that kind of thing today. Now, he won't show up and walk with you in physical presence, but in the person of the Spirit, he goes with you. And I'm seeing some pretty thoughtful expressions around the room, because I know a little bit about some things that are going on. And yes, he wants to be involved in your situation. He really does. The psalmist said it this way: "From my distress I called upon the Lord. The Lord answered me and set me in a large place. The Lord is for me. I will not fear. What can man do to me?" So maybe it's pain, maybe it's grief, loss, heartache, some kind of testing. He knows all the details about it. He promised his Spirit to help. Jesus said, "I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper, that he may be with you forever." That is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it does not see him or know him. But you know him because he abides with you and will be in you. So the angel of the Lord won't come and escort you personally through the valley of the shadow of death or any other major difficulty that you're in. But he will, by means of the Spirit, help you as only he can. Well, the king's response again is very interesting. He's responded to other things that have happened, and now he has another big statement again. He's He's amazed, and yet he still hasn't totally comprehended that this is the God, the only God. But he does say this: "Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap. Inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." So he's starting to get it. Daniel's God, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God, is unique. But it still has the appearance that he's still just on the list. And next week, we'll look at what happens to Nebuchadnezzar that takes him much farther. I think we're going to see him. I think he's with the Lord. Now, if you're not so sure, and I can understand that, he did some pretty wacky things. But his testimony in this upcoming chapter is pretty encouraging. But what these guys went through was a huge testimony to him. And they had no idea it was going to go this way. You know, we're so familiar with the story, and we just know how it's going to turn out, you know, every time we hear it. They didn't know that. They thought they were going into eternity. Most likely. It was possible that the Lord could deliver him, and he did it amazingly. But there's been lots of other believers down through the ages that were in a similar situation, and the Lord didn't choose to send the angel of the Lord to deliver them through it. He just allowed them to have their physical body die, and they went to be with him. We were reminded again of some of those individuals in the church history class recently. John Huss being one of them. We just never know how our lives may impact somebody else as we go through a difficult season, difficult experience. In this case, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had a tremendous impact on the king. And there will be more that we'll look at in a week. But their faithful testimony, even to the point of death, had tremendous impact. There have been a lot of people that have stood alone. We mentioned some earlier. Hebrews 11 is just full of names of individuals that stood alone, had courage in the face of death. Other individuals down through church history have done the same. Martin Luther, John Huss, many more. They came against false teachings, against heresy, and their lives impacted many others. Randy Alcorn, some of you have read some of his books. He was imprisoned because he was involved in trying to encourage people to not have abortions. And he stood for that and ended up spending some time in prison because of it. There's been people in the news recently that have taken stands against immorality, and they've really gotten some heat. Seems like here in the last few years, about every 6 months, I hear another story about a baker somewhere that, you know, having a big problem because somebody came to them, wanted them to make a cake for an occasion that's just not, it's just not in here. And sometimes the baker is exonerated. The judge honors their position, their religious rights, freedom of speech, and sometimes not so much. I've heard of people getting shut down, their businesses closed. Standing alone is a big deal. Sooner or later, here's the deal. Sorry to bring this to you, but sooner or later, you're going to be in a position where you're going to have to stand because somebody is going to be trying to pressure you to do something that you know is not God's will. And they'll be saying that good is evil and evil is good. And when that happens, what will you say? Will you have the determination and the courage of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? God can help. He can provide that. Will you rely on your own understanding, or will you trust completely in the Lord to make you a courageous overcomer?